Welcome, friends. Thank you for being here. I hope you're having a good day. You are listening to Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. My name is Henrik, and I am from Sweden, a country in utter shambles. I'm sure you understand why we are so passionate about the subjects that we cover, considering what is happening in this land of confusion. Perhaps it is Ragnarök after all. You can hear new programs 3 times a week, and this includes Radio 314 with Lana. RedIceCreations.com is the website. RedIceRadio.net takes you directly to the radio show. Subscribe to our podcast feeds and the RSS news feeds as well to get our latest updates to you. Well, this is media that brings attention to the kind of subjects that you won't hear in many other places, primarily due to the intense, politically correct, restrained environment that we find ourselves in. We don't necessarily agree with everything all our guests say, but since when has it been about agreeing 100% with what everyone says? We are simply trying to understand how we got in this mess and who is responsible. We are doing the job, really, that the state-subsidized media is not, by focusing on a large and growing part of the population around the Western world that are sick and tired of not having their voices heard. Lined up for you today, we have Angelo John Gage to speak about his activism with National Youth Front and what took him to this place. They have been behind several campaigns going after people in the university environment that have been very vocal about their blatant hatred and discrimination of European Americans, without, of course, receiving any repercussions for it. So they have taken it upon themselves to do various operations in order to bring awareness to the hypocrisy of these so-called tolerant people. We also have a lot to discuss concerning his work on how to organize and bring awareness to the blatant injustices and sanctioned discrimination that takes place in the media against people of European heritage. Welcome, Angelo. Thank you so much for coming on the program. It's good to have you here. Hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing great, Henrik. It's an honor to be here on your show.
Good to have you here. Now, I suspect a few of our listeners might have caught your show on 314 that you did with Lana here a few months ago. But, you know, just in case we have a few with us who didn't, and maybe some new listeners as well, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the work that you've been doing, Angelo, specifically then with the National Youth Front. Tell us a bit about the website.
Yeah, the National Youth Front, when I first came on the show with Lana, I spoke about the organization, which is pretty much an anti-supremacist conservation group for white Europeans and their descendants across the world, so we could preserve our race, culture, and heritage. That's really what we are. We're not a political organization. You know, we don't have a political ism. In fact, I call it an ismless resistance, meaning that we don't adhere to any religion, even though there's people who are religious in our group, and we don't adhere to any isms, even though there's people in our group who think certain isms, and when I say ism, like conservatism or whatever isms they believe in, as a National Youth Front member, you put your isms aside, and you're just a white person of European descent who's concerned with the future of your race. You see how that works, Henrik? So
yeah.
That forces the enemy to hate us for being white instead of saying, well, I'm a national socialist, and they go, oh, look, those guys are Nazis over there, so we hate them for that. Or, hey, I'm a Christian. Oh, well, they're just Bible-thumping Christians, and I hate them for that. But if you raise your hand and say, hey, I'm a white person of European descent, and I want to protect myself, they have to say, well, I hate you for being white. You know, so this ideology that I came up with, this anti-supremacist conservation organization, it's really hard for our enemies to label us. And they still try to do it, of course, but
yeah,
they have no evidence or anything, because I've never said anything. I've never claimed to be part of a political ideology myself. I still don't even know it's going to work. You know, I'm more concerned about preserving ourselves and all of our people. And anti-supremacist means that I want every race to do the same thing for themselves. I want nothing to do with what they're trying to do with themselves. I don't want them ruling over me. I don't want to rule over them. They could believe what they want to believe. You know, so it's like a live and let live policy. And so basically our group, we stand up against the defamation of our people. We don't attack things. We react to and confront those who defame us and slander us and our people. For example, when I was with Lana a few months ago on the show, we talked about Operation Bad Teacher. And it was basically how Arizona State University had this class called The Problem of Whiteness. Now, that's very offensive,
yes,
saying that this is a problem of whiteness. And, you know, they say, well, it's about the whole concept of whiteness, you know, and all these other things. But we know that there would be no problem of blackness class or problem of Jewishness class. It wouldn't exist. It wouldn't even get to the drawing board. So we protested that, and we got a lot of coverage for that, and members joined because of that. And we've been pretty busy since then. But when I spoke to Lana last time, we had an age restriction to the National Youth Front. And I realized that it was kind of stupid to do that, because it doesn't matter how old you are. If you want to preserve our people, you have to preserve our youth. So I just want everyone to know here, it doesn't matter how old you are. We have people of all ages now helping out, you know, even older guys who are retired, you know, who help us out with stuff. Because, you know, to care about the future of our people, you really have to focus on our children and our teenagers, yes, and our young adults, which the enemy is focused on brainwashing. They don't care about me and you, really. You know, they really care about getting people, our children, at a young age,
yeah,
you know, so that they grow up into this, the Marxist degeneracy, and accept it as normal.
That's what they've done, you know. That's what they've succeeded in doing.
Oh, yeah, especially in Sweden, unfortunately.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I read articles in Sweden, and I'm like, wow, what is going on
over
there?
We're ahead of the curve, you know, for sure. There is a quiet majority, I'd say, at this stage that is silently against all of this, but I feel that the further they kind of push, we're approaching the tipping point, because certain aspects is getting so absurd that, you know, moderate people who are kind of in between or don't really care about certain things, they are realizing how much they're being cornered right now. So to a certain extent, I guess our enemies is doing the job for us to a certain extent, because they just keep pushing and pushing, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I said it before many times. You know, Angel, what do we do? Oh, my God, we're out of... I said, no, listen, just sit back and watch what they do to themselves and then react to it. So the enemy makes a move that's so stupid, you're like, hey, look at that move over there. And they go, wow, like this transracial thing. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Race doesn't exist, but then you could transfer between races.
Did you notice how confused everyone when this unfolded, though? It's like, wait a minute, what are we supposed to think about this? It was hilarious.
They're making these moves that are so stupid, it's almost comical. And Rick, it's like a movie. It's like a bad comedy. And all you have to do is tell everyone, look, this is stupid. So I think within the enemy's plot to destroy us, the seeds of its own destruction are within it. So really, it's a matter of time until they eat themselves alive. And you could even see the arguments between the social justice warriors, you know, that they get mad at each other. You know, like drag queens are now banned from certain events because it offends transgender people. Or it's really getting out of control. It's really getting funny.
They're starting to, exactly, when the beast is like, have killed everything in its way, it's like turning on itself and starting to, you know, gnaw off its limbs and its arms and stuff like that. That's really what's happening. And the nuances are so, you know, incredibly fine in some cases. I think that's kind of a side effect of identity politics, that people get so hardened down into these small little groups that there's basically, it's starting to disintegrate, and there's no kind of, I guess, unity from their point of view anymore, which is good, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that they wanted to keep dividing. I mean, they say, you know, you can identify with anything you want, but then you're saying none of these things exist. They're all social constructs. You could just, you know, transfer anything you want to being what race you are, what gender, it's insane. I made a video, I'm a trans Semite, just to say that I can just turn into a Jewish person when I feel like it, so I can go to Israel and get benefits, you know what
yeah,
I mean? Right. I kind of troll back too, just show people how ridiculous this is. But in regards to the National Youth Front, yes, we have gone international since the last time we spoke, you know, so we got members in different countries, New Zealand, the UK, Ukraine, we got a lot of people in Australia because they're really getting hit over there.
And
we keep growing chapters all over the United States as well. I really want to grow I'm making it international because I want everybody to be under this banner that I've created, you know, because sure, we all have different countries, and each country will have a different form of government, but ultimately we are all of the white race, and we need to band together, putting politics and religion aside, because these are the two things that have been killing our people and causing wars against each other, you know, depending on what kind of god you worship. I mean, which invisible person is your favorite? I'm going to kill you because you worship Odin, and then you worship Christ, and these are divisive things, and we just need to put them aside for now, gain our freedom from this Marxist matrix, and then we can separate it later on into our own little ethno-states. Or that's what I'm pretty much advocating, a peaceful revolution, bloodless revolution. I don't want any violence. I never advocate violence. We don't need violence, Henrik, because the enemy is violent. They need violence.
That's right.
They're the one with the thugs. And, you know, if you look at how other people, like, for example, Martin Luther King and even Gandhi, they just let themselves get beat up all the time to the point where they, you know, they look like the good guys. You know, so in a way, we whites are doing the same thing to an extent. I mean, we're getting the knockout games and all this other stuff. And the media is saying, no, blacks are being killed every day. Well, that's not the case. It's whites. You know, we all know this, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact of the matter is that we're taking this beating, and it's getting so obvious now that, hey, this is getting ridiculous. Look what they're doing with the flag, Confederate flag getting removed, mm-hmm. graves being desecrated. They're really making these moves now. So it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, definitely we'll get into some of that later, the kind of the deconstruction of what's happening and where you think this is going to go, of course. But tell us just a little bit. I'm just curious, for those who don't remember the story, but how did you, you know, wake up to all of this? It's always interesting hearing that story because people are, you know, concerned with different things and you know, they come to this realization from different aspects. How did you kind of stumble across this, Angelo?
Well, I've always been a curious kid. Like when I was a kid, I go to the doctor, like, what's that for? What's that for? Like every tool he uses, you know? So I've always had this curiosity since I was younger. I always asked questions. And then I joined the Marine Corps after 9/11 because I believed that whole tower story. And so I went to war twice. I'm a two-time war veteran, U.S. Marine. And I came back, and I wanted to get back into civilian life. But before I left the Marine Corps, like 3 months before I was finished with my service, a friend of mine sent the video, and his little brother actually, sent the video of 9/11 loose change. And I was watching, I saw these towers collapse again. I'm like, wait a minute. It was explaining how this is a bomb going off and there were no terrorists and it's all fake. So the 9/11 conspiracy thing started this whole curiosity thing. Then as I was in the Marine Corps, I was actually looking up the Battle of Fallujah, which was one of the strong points of the enemy. And we were dropping white phosphorus gas on these people, which is similar to what is exactly what the Israelis do to the Palestinians.
Yeah.
And it like burns you to a crisp. I don't know how this does not violate the Geneva Conventions, but if you see the victims of this chemical weapon, they say it's not a chemical weapon, but it is, because it's a gas that burns you to a skeleton. I mean, there's no escape. So I learned about, and I'm like, wait a minute, we're the good guys. So I started to realize that 9/11 story is just obviously not true. We're bombing people with gas. What's going on here? Then I got into like all these other people, David Icke. I got into Michael Tesserian. I literally just started Jordan. I actually spoke to Jordan Maxwell on the phone twice. It was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, a lot of these guys, they take it another direction. But I spoke to everybody. Not everybody. I got into Alex Jones. But it was actually funny that it was David Icke who woke me up to Rothschild Zionism. So
yeah.
That was like the fight. So I went through Alex Jones, German death cults, and, you know, invisible people coming to get you. And then, you know, here I am listening to a man talk about shape-shifting lizards and aliens, and then he says something about Rothschild Zionism. So I looked that up, and then I Googled that, and I started looking into the bankers and the Jewish power. And then I was actually watching The Greatest Story Never Told while Dennis Wise was making it. Like, he would make a 15-minute clip. Or I'm sorry, every time he'd make a new chapter, it would be 15 minutes long, and he'd come out with it every 2 weeks. So I was actually watching The Greatest Story Never Told as he was making it, and that really woke me up to everything. I was like, oh my God, I didn't expect that. And then I learned about white genocide. Because, you know, it's one thing to learn about the history, okay, that's different, but I didn't know we were still under attack. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that really was like, whoa, okay, that's crazy, the whole, you know, World War II thing. Total opposite, but I still didn't know that this was going on and our people are completely still under attack. So I made a video, my first YouTube video ever on this topic, and it just went viral. Like, I don't know, because I'm a Marine, I guess because, you know, I said Marine talks about white genocide, and that's what kind of got me on the map. And, you know, I just did more research. I read a lot of books, a lot of them. And I learned more truth, and I was like, wow, we have a problem, and I have to do something about it. But that's how I pretty much woke up. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, because I guess this is one of those topics where the programming is so strong that even if most people can see the truth and the hypocrisy of what's happening, they fear to go into it because we've been so conditioned on this issue alone, and particularly in the West, I'd say that we have no propensity at all to try to look after our own interest, and especially the interest of our own people. Was that something you had to kind of break through, or was that just you just headed there immediately?
I didn't even realize that I was like race mattered. Like I was one of those people. Like race didn't make any difference to me. Like I've never had a problem with other races. I still don't have a problem with anyone. You know, I just didn't have an awareness of my race being under attack and what racial purity meant and genetics. I had no clue. We didn't learn this stuff. So once I learned about it, it took me just. I learned quickly. So once the second I realized that race was real, that was it for me. You know, it was like, all right, I gotta protect my people. And I advocate every race to protect themselves, of course,
sure,
from this Marxist supremacy, from these diversity supremacists. That's what they really are. And so that was easily for me to transition to. I wasn't like in denial for that. I wasn't even in denial at all. I just never knew, you know, about this stuff going on. And so once I woke up, it was on my feet 24/7 thinking about how to refute the enemy and break down their illogical arguments and expose the lies. I mean, I've been for the last 3 years, like nonstop doing this in my head and just making videos and talking to people and waking everybody up as much as I can. That's what I've been doing. So I've been on my feet ever since I woke up in 2012. It was October when I learned the truth, like the final truth. I was like, okay, that's it. This is my new passion in life because, you know, I went to war for a fake thing.
Yeah,
and I put my life on the line for that. So what's more honorable than putting your life on the line for your people? And when I say that, Henrik, I mean, are people trying to kill me right now? No, but there may be a time in my life where I will get hurt. I got trolls stalking me, exposing my address, people who actually send me hate mail, you know, there's consequences to this. And I put my real name and my face out. I never had a fake name. And, you know, now my address is out there because some of these trolls – and someone could literally come up here right now with a shotgun and kill me. Now, I'm not that important right now, but there could be a day where I become influential and get, you know, hurt, or someone attacks me in a mob. I mean, who knows?
Sure.
So this is life and limb because you're going against the entire planet. this is not something where you'll make money anymore. My name is pretty much destroyed. If I went to go get a job somewhere, it probably wouldn't even happen, you know? So that's the thing with this. That's why a lot of people are scared, as you said. I mean, I bet you most Swedish people agree with what you're thinking, but are afraid to say it because of that matrix that is imposed on them, that they're stuck in, that can shut them down. It could kill them in their wallets. It could starve them. It could character assassinate them. So it's really – that's what's keeping people in check is this fear of being, you know, ostracized, accosted, you know, and your character assassinated.
To most people, Angelo, unless you become more public and speak out about these kinds of things, sure, then it occurs. But in other cases, I think it's more a fear of being socially ostracized, of losing your friends. Right. And this is something that happens all the time, of course, because the norm that has been established is basically that if you have any, interests as a white person, as a European, you're Adolf Hitler basically, and you're out. That's it. And this has worked for a very, very long time, unfortunately. And I've always tried to understand why it works so well on people and what this fear is all about.
Well, it's simple, actually. It's psychology. It's this, cause I did, I got certified in neurolinguistic programming because I did go to college and I dropped out twice because I was like, I don't like this. I don't like being taught these things. So I actually pursued a career in sales for a little bit. So I've always been like an entrepreneur. I never really went with the system. I got a 3.83 GPA, got accepted to Rutgers, and I was like, I don't feel this. You know, and I had a GI Bill. I didn't have to pay for college. And I could have finished my degree and all that, but I was like, I don't need this. And I got into like life coaching because I wanted to learn how to heal myself, you know, the post-traumatic stress, the whole war stuff, you know. So I got certified in neurolinguistic programming as a master's certification course in New York City. It took me 2 years to complete it, and hypnosis and all that stuff. And they broke down how powerful language is And that's what our enemies have done. They are the masters at crafting certain terms like anti-Semite and Nazi and all these things that what these things do, they evoke certain emotions. So like Pavlov's dog, the experiment with the bell, every time you rung the bell, the dog will salivate, you see?
Yeah.
So anytime someone says anti-Semite, instantaneously, because of the programming of the movies and the Hollywood narratives, and they go right to Auschwitz. So even if I'm saying 2 + 2 = 4, they say he's a Nazi, it's no longer 4 anymore. And even if it is 4, they don't want to talk to someone who's saying that, even if it's true. You know, one of my friends had told me, Andrew, if you had the cure of cancer in your pocket and you're walking down the street in a full-blown SS uniform from Nazi Germany, nobody would believe you. Even if you really had the cure for cancer, because that imagery, that symbol, the swastika, the whole look of that era will bring back these Holocaust films and the camps and the deaths and the Jews, and they just will run away, even if it is true or not. It doesn't matter. They don't want to associate with it. And that's kind of like the Pavlov. It's a psychological anchor. So they have been able to demonize these things and brainwash people so much so that the second these things come up, if you even say the word Hitler in public in any way, if I just say Hitler, then all of a sudden people start looking at me like, what the? And if I say the word Jew, if I say Jew, everyone's okay. If I say Jew, then it's wrong. Just words, that the way they're said, how they're said, the context. You know, if you say the N-word in a certain way, if you're black, it's okay. If it's in a song. But if I'm a white person, I say it out of context in anger, like Hulk Hogan did, then you get fired. But if you say it like Vince McMahon, part of a script as comedy, or George Carlin, and one of his comedies he said the N-word, then it's okay, because it's comedy. But out of context, it's not okay. So that's how they control they control us, because if you look at us like this, Henrik, if you see it, the human mind is a supercomputer that takes commands. It cannot escape words. You could escape bullets, bombs, knives, you can run away, but you cannot unhear something. So the second I speak to you and say, imagine this, or whatever, you know, then you will imagine. If I say, do not think of a pink elephant, you just thought of an elephant that was pink because your brain has to not think of it. And it has to say, well, don't think of this. And it thinks of it, you see? So there's really no escape from words, and our enemies know this. So what they do is they make words. They repeat them over and over, and they make these words that have certain, images that come with them. So Nazi comes with the Holocaust, Hitler Holocaust, you name it. You know, white supremacy. You got the hoods and the crosses, the images that are posted over and over on the media, in films, even the word KKK. I mean, you name it. You know, slavery. You got the Django, and they use Hollywood constantly to make these movies to solidify this narrative that we're bad.
Yeah.
Always, even if it's not true, because the brain, as I learned in this neurolinguistic programming, the brain cannot, or the mind really, cannot differentiate between reality and your imagination. So if you're actually scared of spiders, and you have a phobia, and I tell you to imagine the biggest spider crawling on your arms right now, even though it's not there, you imagining it, you get afraid. You know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
So,
yep.
So the human mind is very powerful, but it's easily manipulated by language and imagery, and our enemies have mastered it with their propaganda. So the only way out of it is to make up our own words, like anti-white, you see, and not use their language, not identify with their symbols, not say you're a national socialist or whatever. I mean, you can if you want. I'm just saying, for me, I learned that the way out of this is to say, I'm a white person who's concerned with their future. I don't care what you call me. Doesn't matter. I don't identify with anything you've created. I don't play your game. And that's the way out, I think.
You know, I was thinking about, we don't get stuck talking about celebrities here, but if these are kind of, I'm not saying that they're all planned or whatnot, but they come out at the end of it as kind of public shaming campaigns, like Hulk Hogan you brought up. And I wonder if that is to kind of show to the rest of the world as well, that they jump on this opportunity to basically show that, you know, even if you're like a millionaire or whatever he is, if you're famous, you're a celebrity, you have some kind of influence and all that, that doesn't matter, because if you break the narrative, you know, you're out and you're going to get ostracized. I mean, there's been numerous of these kinds of examples you know, like the basketball
and
owner.
And he was Jewish. Donald Stern exactly. was a Jew, and they still hung him.
That's right, because he broke the narrative, right? He broke, you know, Mel Gibson. There's tons of these other campaigns, and I'm not saying, you know, that they've set out to destroy them beforehand, but I think they jump on the opportunity to socially ostracize them, and they have to come back crawling on their knees and beg for forgiveness to be let back into the club again. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. It's showing them the power of their power, and it's also teaching us, like Pavlov's dogs, in another way, to not behave this way.
Yeah.
So do not do this. Here's what happens if you do this. Okay, everyone got the lesson? Okay, bye. Good. No one does it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to control people. I mean, you know, we're not being controlled by bayonets and soldiers in the street. We are policing ourselves
yeah.
in our own minds and our fear. That's why mind control is really the most powerful weapon. And the weapon that delivers this is the media. So the controlled media really is the greatest weapon ever created in the hands of our enemy. Well, we created it, but our enemy stole it and are using it. I mean, it's not a nuclear bomb. It's not bullets. It's not the knives. It's literally ideas that convince you to hate yourself or believe in something that you don't even want to question because of the consequences. And it is very, very impressive to me. Despite, you know, like I look at our enemies and I'm impressed at what they've done because really they're a minority on this planet and they've convinced everyone to do what they want by just telling them to. They didn't come over here with machine guns. I mean, they sent us to do it, but it's just very interesting that, you know, this just shows you how powerful language is, and that's why I believe the way out of this mess is to create our own terms, stop using their language completely, and just create a whole new narrative outside of theirs to just completely sidestep them. That's what I'm trying to do with my organization, and I think other people are doing this as well, and without even knowing I know I'm doing it on purpose. But I've seen other groups do something similar without knowing what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like subconsciously. So I think there's a virus that attacked us and we're kind of all waking up. I mean, this is global too. I'm seeing people wake up on their own, you know?
Well, and that's bound to happen with, as I said before, with all the pressure that's on them right now, you know?
Yeah. And they're making these stupid moves and it's just making, I love this stuff. I hope Hillary gets elected because it'll be even easier for us to, you know, I mean,
right.
I think, like Donald Trump, you know, for example, he's saying all these cool things like, I'm close the borders. I love the Mexican people, but I'll make them build the wall and immigrant. But that doesn't stop white genocide. Even if you close the borders, he doesn't talk about the Federal Reserve. He doesn't, and he loves Israel. So he's going to, he said, I'll put boots on the ground for Iran so they get their war anyway.
Wonderful.
But either way, these elites win. You know, they could hold white genocide for a few years and go do something else in the Middle East for a minute, and then they'll switch back.
And it would almost be worse to a certain extent because it probably would kind of let out some of the pressure. They market these steam valves, as I call them now and then, to kind of come in and channel some of the discontent, in this case of the American people, and saying, well, at least he's, you know, talking about the border, so that's good, you know, but it's like, it's not going to the root of the problem, obviously.
Of course not. Yeah, they would never endorse a politician like that. I mean, even Ron Paul, he was great, and he even spoke about the Fed, but nothing ever happened with Ron Paul.
No.
You know, he just nothing, and I really don't even follow politics, to be honest with you. I don't even know half the stuff that's going on right now, because I know it's a dog and pony show,
sure.
and I don't waste my time with it. You know, and I should know more about it, but I just say, look, folks, the system's failed. I don't care what, you know, well, you don't know much. I'm like, well, it's like knowing the intricate details of a fairy tale book. I mean, I don't need to know these details. They don't work. It's against human nature. It's basically communism, and we don't need to do this anymore. That's my thing. You know, I just say, let's get out of this mess and go our own ways. We tried it. It failed. It continues to fail. It has failed in history. Every empire ever that was multicultural, polyglot, collapsed from the Roman Empire to the Indo-Aryan empires to everything, Egypt even. They just all fell apart because they did the same thing that we're doing right now. They imported other foreigners. They enslaved them. They bred with them. And then next thing you know, they're in power. And then they take over everything and you're gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of scary when you take the long view of that, you know, but and we'll see if we can return to that later if we want to. But I wonder how they've gotten to this stage where they are now being able to pull off some of the things they're doing now. We can get into this. In some cases, it's happening in universities, but also on TV. It's education and media, but it's also just what some professors are saying. Because I think what's happening now wouldn't have been, possible maybe, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, definitely not 60 to 70 years ago, basically just one to two generations, how quickly things have changed. You brought up the problem of whiteness, that course, but I mean, that's just a beginning. They're professors that are just like openly talking about that white people will have to be removed from the planet, from the planet. Did you ever see this latest MTV documentary, White People? I haven't seen it yet. Did you see it?
I didn't watch. I just watched the trailer and I instantly knew it was a bunch of propaganda. And honestly, you look at the video on MTV on YouTube, there's so many thumbs down. It's not even, there's a petition going around that I was throwing around as well. I was retweeting it and sending it to people. To sign this petition to shut this down, like Lana made that one show about George St. George that got shut down too. I mean, that just automatic. I mean, how can you possibly watch that show as a white person and not be offended? So I think the ratings would suck for this show anyway, and it'll probably never do it again. But it just goes to show you that they're actively trying to brainwash everybody, especially our kids. And like you said, Arizona State University was just one incident. There's many more. I mean, after that school, there was another ASU, Appalachian State University, which had a privilege board. So this one guy, he was non-white, I think he was homosexual, I don't know what he was, had this privilege board of Christian privilege and white privilege, cisgender privilege, and all this stuff. So we decided to team up with our friends at Trad Youth and say, hey, listen, they're making fun of Christians. So we sent guys over there to put our flyers up against their flyers, like Christian privilege. And there's people getting like nailed to a cross in a Coliseum, like male privilege. There's a whole graveyard of dead soldiers, like memes to counter their memes that are stupid. And all we did, literally, check this out. We did that. Plus we put flyers up. So our organization, National Youth Front, put up the flyers, defend your people. That's it with the symbol. Trad Youth had their flyers that said faith, family, and folk. This school went berserk. They go, oh my God, these racist flyers. One kid said, defend your people. A chilling sentence. Like, what? What are you talking about chilling? Like, the thought of white people defending them. Again, look, we're just reacting to the boards that were put up. We didn't go out there with, swastikas and say, get out of our town. No, it was, you guys made this move, and we showed up and said, that's not right. That's discrimination. That's anti-white bigotry. And, the whole school was, they're blogging about it, and it got, some media attention. I mean, it was a small area. It was Appalachia, which is funny because that's where the poorest white people live.
Right, exactly,
So what kind of white privilege do they have?
Proof of white privilege. Is insane.
Right.
Insane.
Yeah. So it's just so crazy, Henrik, how the enemy really fits the opposite narrative. It's almost like unbelievable. It's like the big lie, over and over again. You're just like, wow, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, the group that's not protected, not under the same kind of standard as most other people. And again, something that comes perfectly natural to everyone else is somehow, misapplied to us, that somehow we're set to the side and treated differently. We're held to a different standard for some reason. In this case, isn't it them who's doing the separation there and trying to single us out for something,
Yeah, no, that's the whole, white people have everything, power, privilege. It's just ridiculous because we've suffered slavery. I mean, Irish people were slaves. I'm Italian. I wasn't even considered white back in the day, right?
Right.
So, I mean, everybody suffered.
But that's the thing, they rewrite the history books, though, because, I mean, they think when I look at stuff now about, colonial Britain or France or something like that, they almost make it seem that it was like this. It was solely on a racial. I mean, these are huge empires that were not only fighting with each other; they were fighting with every other nation next to them, and there was a power grab and all these kinds of things. But when you pick up a kind of a simplified history books today, they make it seem that somehow it was like solely on a racial basis that they're going to conquer the rest of the world for Europe, so we can dominate everyone else, which is like utterly ridiculous. It was completely different drives that was going on at the time. But that's effective.
That's what I'm saying. That's what they do. They incrementally, over the generations, rewrite the history books, literally. Like the children's history books. Like I saw one saying the Second Amendment was for militias only. You know, like the right to bear arms only. Like they started switching the words around, you know, so our kids learn and say, oh, we don't need guns. You know, so over time, that's what they've done incrementally. And see, that's the thing. A lot of white folks who are listening are like, oh, we're screwed, you know, we're hated against. But think about this. When the feminists came out, they were hated first, too. I mean, our enemies were hated when they started coming out of here in the 60s and not college campuses. Everyone thought they were crazy, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, they fought hard to get power. They didn't just come in here and do one picket thing and left and they gained power. No, they have been doing this for so long. Some argue thousands of years, you know, undermining empires, you know. I'd say this is the last century has been their peak power, you know, ever since World War II. These globalists have really gained a lot of power, and it's because of the media and the way they control the narrative in our schools mostly. So our generations that are coming now are the ones they're targeting more than anything. They're not going after the World War II veteran who's about to pass out in his chair soon, you know, listening to the radio at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They're coming after our children, even as young as kindergartner, saying, you know, you're not white. There's no such thing as white. You could be a boy or a good transgender camps for 8-year-olds. I mean, this is what they're trying to do, Henrik. And it's incrementally, you know, pushed on us over time where you don't feel it. It's like putting a frog in a pot, I guess the saying, and you boil him slowly. He doesn't know. It gets hot over time, and then he's dead, basically. That's what's happening to our people. But with every reaction, there's a equal and opposite reaction. So whatever they do that's ridiculous, we fight back. You know, the fact that this show exists shows us that. The fact we're not in a gulag right now shows us that there is an opposition to this.
Yeah.
And I'm positive about it. A lot of people are negative about it, overscrewed. But I know the power of language. And I know that even like this show that you've done with Lana has reached countless people. You can't even tell how many people you've influenced through the radio. People you'll never see in your life that have been awakened to the truth. And then now can waken up, they can awaken their family and friends as well. But yeah, this whole phenomenon, anti-white teachers, is really getting, they're getting more confident in coming out even more. And we just did an activism a few weeks ago. Well, actually, yeah. Week or two ago or whatever it was, July 7th. Yeah, that's when we did it, called Operation Grumpy Grundy. And this lady, I don't know if you heard of her. Her name is Syeda Grundy.
Mm-hmm.
She basically said that white college males are a problem population. Okay. She said this as she's working at Boston University. And so we waited for her first day of work, which I think was July 7th. And we went there and we postered the school. We went to her sociology wing. We saw flyers that said, I support SATA, and then we put our flyer on top of it. And we recorded it, made a video. All of this stuff's on our website. If you go to nationalyouthfront.com, it's all there. All the stuff that happened after that. You know, the Boston Globe reported on it, the Boston Sun-Times calling us one person wrote that we're terrorists, like domestic terrorists. And again, all of our flyers said, Henrik, this is all it said, was that it said black privilege. It said something like, means that you can call the entire white male population a problem population. And you know, that's what it pretty much, I mean, let me look at the flyer real quickly because I just want to make sure I got it right here.
Yeah, sure. No, it's amazing how open they can be. I mean, we always say this, but imagine folks that you just would turn these words around and put it in a different context. Or just swap out the targeted group or whatnot. Imagine the outrage by certain things that these people have said. If you replace it with Asian or black or Malaysian or whatever, and it would be an outrage. They would be fired. They'd be ostracized. They'd be attacked on the streets. You know. But in this case, it's
burned down.
Perfectly
even.
Fine. You know.
Well, so let me just tell you. I go back to the. So we had this flyer. This big. We had big posters and little ones. It said black privilege. Means not being fired after saying that the white college males are a problem population. And we have the BU symbol, we put anti-white across it, and then we put hashtag fire Grundy. Now this operation was different because usually we put our website, you know, but this time all we did was put a hashtag. So we wanted to create a media buzz of who did this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it worked. So we had people blasting Fire Grundy on Twitter constantly, over and over again. So by the time everyone found out that they saw this hashtag, they went to the hashtag on Twitter. So we used social media for our advantage in a secret way. So this was a genius idea that me and my second in command, his name is Nathan, we thought of this. We're like, should we put our website? Let's try this hashtag thing, see what happens. You know, and it worked wonderfully, and it got the attention of all these media outlets. And like I mentioned, the Boston Magazine, Boston Sun-Times. And again, they thought we didn't say anything wrong with it. There's no hatred on here, and it was called hate speech. It was called racism. Yeah. We're standing up against anti-white bigotry, and that makes me a racist.
Absolutely. Well, exactly. You
know. And I didn't even say anything. We just said get her fired. And the funny thing is, Henrik, other students had already made a petition before we even did anything. There's been a petition to get rid of her signed by over 3,000 signatures needed, and it was over that.
Mm-hmm.
So thousands of students have said fire this woman. Yeah. You know, and they're probably all different colors, and they're, you know, and she's still there. And so we did Operation Grumpy Grundy. We went up there to Boston. I was personally involved in this. I'm actually on the video. Everyone else is blurred out for their safety because you never know what they. Because then they said in one article, we're gonna punish them to the extent of the law or some stuff. Mm-hmm. So then later I said, okay, you know, I had a bunch of posters left, and this is all of this is on video. You can go to my YouTube channel, Angelo John Gage. You can see I record everything because I want everyone to see what I'm doing. Because this inspires people to, you know, get excited and, wow, he's doing this. I'm going to do it too. And members joined because of this. We had a lot of people join since I last called. We spoke. I spoke with Lana. And like I said, we went international. Because we do activism and, you know, I'm out there. My face is out there. So the last operation, the last phase of Grumpy Grundy was me literally writing letters to everyone possible in that administration. So all of these sociologists. So I sent like 34 letters out. Four of them went to the president, the provost, the dean of students, which was an African American, and the vice president. I sent two letters to the head of PR, and I sent all these letters to everyone but Seda in her sociology wing. And I asked a question like, "Dear Sally, why do you support the anti-white bigot Seda Grundy?" with a question mark. You know, that's it. I didn't say anything threatening. I wrote the four letters I wrote to the big dogs, the president, provost, and all the others. I actually wrote a letter. And an African-American guy, I said, hey, as an African-American, I think you should stand in solidarity with your white students. Here's a great opportunity to break the trend that's coming across the world, you know, all these universities. And I think that your white staff is too afraid. So with your support, you guys could end anti-white bigotry. And he didn't say anything. So I tried to speak out to these people, and I wrote them these letters trying to talk sense. I mean, I said to the trustees, the board of trustees, I said, you know, I heard that a lot of alumni are not donating to anymore. Is Seda Grundy worth your money? Is she worth losing money over? Because a lot of students, once they saw this, are activists, like, I'm not going to donate to this school anymore. So, you know, we did a lot of good things there. And when I sent these letters out the other day, I actually made a video about this. I got a letter from the police chief of Boston University saying I am banned from Boston University.
Oh, really?
How funny is that? Yeah, it's ridiculous. Banned from the premises and all these other areas in that area without any explanation whatsoever. If you'd want me to, I could read it to you if you want.
Yeah, do that. I mean, don't you have to be like kind of officially served or something for a document like that? Did you just, or?
Well, I got it in the mail, mm-hmm. and it says Boston University Police Department, Office of the Chief of Police, with his address and all that stuff like that. And it says, Dear Mr. Gage, effective immediately, you're hereby notified. You are forbidden to enter or remain upon any of the properties of Boston University. This prohibition includes, but is not limited to, any classroom building, laboratory, administrative office, residence hall, faculty office, parking garage, library, student center, or any commercial property, including City Convenience, Barnes & Noble, which I never didn't even know they had one, 660 Beacon Street, and the BU Fit Rec, Commonwealth Avenue, which is an entire street. I don't know how they pulled that off. And the Agus Arena, 925 Common Avenue, and that's pretty much it. So he's like, if you are found upon any of these properties of Boston University, you will be deemed a trespasser under Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 266, Section 120, and subject to arrest and persecution under said Chapter 266 and Section 120. Now, I don't know exactly what I did. I mean, literally, they were black students that went to Boston University and had a die-in, okay? Like, they literally laid on the floor all over the place. You've seen these things.
Yeah. Before.
None of these people, and this is from executive director of public safety, by the way. So I don't know how I'm a public safety issue. You know, he's a chief of police. It's incredible. I mean, I did nothing but exercise my First Amendment right to stand up against anti-white bigotry. We posted posters where they're allowed to be posted. You know, we put them on campus and all that stuff like that, where other posters were. You know, the big ones maybe not so, but, you know, I didn't post the big one. I posted the ones on the video, and that's what I did. So I did nothing wrong. I exercised my First Amendment right as a concerned citizen and against racism against our people, and that got me banned from Boston. And it says I can, he's saying, you know, call me, please call my office if you have any questions about this notice. Now, I haven't called him yet because it's possible he may be, you know, bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
He could be violating civil rights because if Boston University takes federal money, they can't be doing this kind of stuff, I don't think. I'm not sure. So I didn't call him back until I speak to my lawyer about it. And so I want to call him back with ammo. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm.
Just think, but I think it's funny.
Wow.
If I never back again, I don't care if
it shows the climate that we are in, really. And I mean, who knows what they are thinking? They think you're going to go there and blow up a bomb or something. You know, that they're so used to these quote white supremacists unquote being run by the FBI and you know into all these sting operations that they probably think that. You know, that something like that is going to happen. You know, who knows what they're thinking, right? But it nonetheless, whatever they are thinking, it shows that basically if you return any of the salvos that they've been firing at us, they treat us completely different than they do with these other groups. You know, and that's just because the whole system is anti-white, right? It's that's what they do best. They treat us in a completely different way than they treat everyone else. You know, and how that is not. You know, bigotry or discrimination, I don't know, but to them, I guess it doesn't have to make sense or be kind of logic or something behind it.
No, it doesn't. It has to simply bypass all of that with their emotional, you know, the words that they use that evoke emotion, black, you know, white supremacist, the neo-Nazi. Again, no one has ever called me for a real interview other than, like, talking points memo where I had a phone conversation. I've had a few email interviews with other people, but ever since Arizona State University, I think people cannot do anything with our narrative. Like, they can't turn it around in their favor. Like, for example, the BBC reached out to us and said, hey, do you guys want to do a documentary with us? Like, hey, okay, who's in this documentary? Oh, the Ku Klux Klan and that. I'm like, nope. Because I know what they're going to do, and I've seen it done to other people.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, where they'll take clips and they'll, you know, put, like, like my one buddy, Matt Heimbeck, who runs Trad Youth Network, he did interview with someone, and you know they took him at a gun range, right, shooting. He's like, and Mr. Heimbeck thinks the only way out is a race war, and he's shooting at a gun range, and then he says they belong in a ditch. What he was talking about was bankers belong in a ditch, but they made it seem like they cut it out and said they belong in a ditch, and other races belong in a ditch. And it's just like, you see, that's what you don't want to do.
They always do that, Angelo. That's the trick. And I think that one was, well, unless there's more, and there might be, but I saw one on ABC News as well about that. And first I was like, wow, I'm surprised he did that. And then it's like, no, wait a minute, they're just editing that way. They always do it that way.
There's no reason. That's why the only thing I'll ever do is a live video feed.
Because
then they can't, you know, I'll probably embarrass them. So no one has ever come up to me and say, hey, Mr. Gage, let's interview, because I don't give them ammo. I don't say crazy stuff. You know, they really have nothing to say. All they could do is bash me over and over again, and my organization and our guys with these names. Actually, Appalachian State University, when they called us neo-Nazis, I had a lawyer send them a letter saying, you know, you're libeling us. They actually retracted that term and called us white nationalists. I said, there is nowhere I've ever said ever in any way, shape, or form that I'm a neo-Nazi at all. We don't even advocate national socialism. We advocate nothing.
Yeah.
We're a conservation organization. So they pulled that back. And that's a college. But I don't think Salon.com would care. They probably have lawyers out there. You know, they could probably destroy us, you know, for even sending a letter. But that's the whole thing, Henry. It's a semantics game. It's a game of memes and semantics and, you know, who could draw the most attention, who could, you know, human beings are simple. It's you either go towards something for pleasure or run away from fear, you know, and like you said, you wonder how it works. It's simple. You get these terms fired up and backed with emotional triggers, they will run for the hills. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're true or not. And most people can't handle the truth. They don't want to handle it. It's too painful. And most people are comfortable. You got your Xbox, you got your Burger King.
Yep.
They're not starving to death. You know, I mean,
no
I go
reason
to,
Wall- to yes. you know, go outside of that comfort zone, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. So those of us who are aware, we're strong. We could take the, pain and suffering, but we have our own people in our way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we're all aware and we're fighting the enemy together. No, we are fighting against our own people who are zombies, and we're trying to wake them up before the time runs out.
Let me ask you, we'll take a break here in a little bit, but what do you think justifies this this difference of handling or dealing with white people differently than any other race in our own societies? Also, that's another thing we have to point out, that despite that we are a majority population and many countries where Europeans are, those are the countries that we've founded, even America to a certain extent. America as a country didn't exist before Europeans came there and made it what it is. Sure, you can go into a whole discussion whether it was, you know, right or, you know, whatever it was. But the fact is that that was, you know, business has been run like that for thousands of years. You take territory, you do what you can, you conquer other people. It wasn't like that they sat down one day and said, maybe morally we're doing the wrong thing here. They didn't even think like that. And any other people have done the same throughout history. So we don't have to get into that debate. But my point is, or my question that I want to get to is, do you think it's justified because somewhere it's kind of seen as some kind of payback because of, you know, colonialism or slavery or all these kinds of things that they're throwing around now, that somehow it's okay to mistreat a young white child, a teenager today, and having them pay back for something that maybe or maybe not their ancestors did 200-300 years ago? What do you think they've been justified in some way when they're doing all these things?
It doesn't have to even be logically justified. It's emotionally programmed for these people to react. So white people get this white guilt, like, yeah, you know, your people killed all the Native Americans and did all this, and but they just focus on our people doing things that are wrong, because we did do things that are wrong, if that's wrong, and not focus on everyone else's empires, like the Turkish Empire and the Ottoman Turks and the jihads and African slavery done by their own people.
Sure.
And all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah.
Genghis Khan, of all,
yep,
I mean,
exactly.
Geez, he almost took over the whole planet.
And they have an exhibit to him now. Was it in, I don't know if it was in New York or somewhere, but they have this beautiful exhibit to a great mass murderer of white people, you know.
Also. He didn't even leave anything behind. At least white people came and gave technology and built empires and stuff. And this guy came around, raped everybody, killed everybody, and just left. Luckily, he passed away. His son turned around, or else maybe we wouldn't be having this conversation. He almost took over the whole damn, he almost took everything over.
Yeah.
But no one talks about him because the movies are focused, the images are focused, and all the words and language are focused on get Whitey, because Whitey took this country from the Native Americans. You know, Whitey did this, Whitey enslaved that, and it's just us, the focus is on us, Henrik. So when it's so much on us, and we're surrounded by people telling us to focus on us, that's all we focus on. And those of us who are not stupid enough to fall for this are like, wait a minute, but this is hypocritical.
Yeah.
But at this point, they don't care, because these people know subconsciously that even though we're right and it is hypocritical, it benefits them. So in a way, they're going with it, because being anti-white is actually profitable, even if you're a white person. If you're willing to sell out your people, you'll get that professorship. You'll get that funding for whatever you're doing, your project. You'll become famous on TV if you make an anti-white rap song, you know, or something like that. But if you stand up against white genocide, and if you are trying to stop this anti, you get destroyed. And Professor Kevin McDonald made an amazing video about this, this whole complex of like how it's actually instilled in us and our people, because we are actually individualists ourselves. We've always been individualists as a race, and you know, we've always fought amongst each other, and never in history have we been in this position where the whole planet wants us pretty much dead, you know, or conquered, reconquered, or whatever, reverse everything and enslave us and all that stuff. If that's what they want, I don't know, but it seems to me they really want payback for everything we've done. But they don't realize that the things that we did do wrong are far outweighed by the things we did right. You know, we ended slavery.
Yep.
One. permanent. There's still slavery in Africa and the Middle East right now. We shared our technology with the whole planet. I mean, they call us a cancer to society, but everything they do and everything they use was made by us, literally. You know, I got guys on Twitter calling me this and that. I go, hey, you're using Twitter and a computer and the wireless internet that a white man made to hate me. Like, what are you talking about? So I know at some level these races who are against us, because even the smarter of people of these races know what's wrong. And they get called names by their own people. I got black people that I know who speak against white genocide, and they get called Uncle Tom.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and there's even Jews who've come out and talked about World War II revisionism, and they get attacked. So, you know, the thing as to why this works is because there's so many crappy people on this planet versus quality people that we're simply outnumbered. You know, and if you have a weapon that can get to these people faster and great numbers, and transform them to be anti-white, and we're outnumbered, it's an uphill battle. I'm not saying we can't win. I'm just saying that's how this works, and it's been justified because of this constant media brainwashing, textbook revision, rewriting the textbooks, and just teaching people to be ashamed, because white people have that guilt complex. That's how we had a moral society. We were altruistic. You know, we knew, you know, not to hurt other people because it would hurt our communities. Other races lived in abundance. You know, they didn't care. You know, we had small families in Europe. Africans had big families. Half of them would die from disease. They'd go, you know, they had different morals, it was a different environment. So we were created to be, our people have lived amongst each other. Yeah, we had fratricidal wars, but our societies were more social, and we police ourselves automatically. So all the enemy had to do was install a system where by policing each other, you get rewarded. You see?
Yeah.
And so those who go around policing the other people with the anti-white narrative get rewarded. Those who disobey get destroyed. And so it's really that simple. And it's been justified because the teaching, like these anti-white bigots like Seda Grundy and Poe and the other guy, I forgot his name, Lee Bubout, these classes are because they're being taught because they want African-Americans to be included in society and that, you know, you've done wrong, you've been wronged, and Native Americans have been wrong, and it's because of these white people. And I say, you know what, we must be the worst white supremacists on earth. I mean, first of all, we have open borders everywhere. We have shows that make fun of us. We give you guys affirmative action, and that hurts us. I mean, we are the worst white supremacists ever.
I know.
You know?
Exactly. It's true. It's true. It's hilarious when you put all these things in perspective, and but also realize that the sinister kind of plans behind these things, and that these are things that are done to be able to steer both the world, but also the Western world politically into a certain direction. And we can talk more about that in the second segment. We're going to take a break here in a little bit. I want to ask you about some of the solutions to this, what you guys are doing and how to invest in young people, but also some of the other things going on right now. I'd like to know how much you're looking at events happening in Europe, for example. So we'll get into some of that in the second. But give us your websites and give us any other details about something you might have upcoming, Angelo, that you want to let people know about before we break here.
Yeah, basically, we never tell anyone what we're going to do, but we have another mission coming up this week, I believe. And, you know, we never tell anyone the details because we always want to surprise everybody. Like, I never tell anyone how many people are in the organization. I never tell anyone anything because stealth and surprise is what really gets our group out there. And they never knew what was coming. You know, Boston University had no idea what was coming, and it was really effective. But the website is www.nationalyouthfront.com. You can go there. And we actually transferred our website to another host, so it might go to us.us, but either one. But just go to .com, nationalyouthfront.com, and you guys could check out what we've done. We have all of our videos in the media section of all the missions we ever done, because every time we do a mission, we make a video, so it's inspirational and people like it. Go, oh, these guys are doing something, you know. So other than that, yeah, that's really it.
All right, very good. We'll have the links up on the website. Yeah, I think I got nyf.us. I think it's the new domain, if I got that right. Okay. All right, we'll have that linked up. Stay with us, folks. Stay with us, Angelo. We'll take a short break, and then we'll be right back with more.
Go on and get some ass. you can buy a class of the nation, but you can't buy class. You bastards think it's funny, lying empty, they know you're right. Think all there is money, cut your future at the sight. Just 'cause you got the power, that don't mean you got the right. You can take my fingers, buddy. You can take my eyes. You can take my past and future. It won't make you wise. You can have me thrown in jail. You can steal my food. You can even steal my mail. Step on my blue suede shoes. You bastard, waste the glove. Cut his mouth down in black and white. But remember, you can never teach a dog to stand upright.
When we return after the break, we have much more to discuss about the double standards, the goals and plans of those who have changed the demography of America and Europe in such a short time. Angelo speaks about how Marxism has inserted itself into our culture, and we speak about the rise of Bolsheviks in America, among many, many other topics. We do not have advertisements in our programs or on the websites, And we do the majority of this broadcast for free. So if you do want to hear more and get into our full archives, the second hour and all programs back to 2006, please acquire a subscription at redicemembers.com. We have over 1,000 programs now in our archives, and growing each week. From soup to nuts, as they say, we have gone all over the place in search for answers and truth. No stone has been left uncovered, from conspiracy, unknown and suppressed history, health, human origins, secret societies, the whole UFO question, to metaphysics, spirituality, doom and end times, manipulation of religion, many, many different topics. And right now, we are focusing a lot on the destruction of the Western world. Cultural Marxism, something that is right at our doorstep, and nothing can be more easy to prove, as it is a reality that we are living now each day. We look at how biased and, simply wrong history is used against us, and we are examining why the establishment push political correctness, force immigration, and create wars to drive them into our countries. What are their goals? That is the question. We have a pretty good idea. This is where globalist capitalists and international socialists have joined forces with the Zio Media to push a strategy of taking out those who have an ability to stop them. And their genocidal agenda is despicable. And we will never lay down, never surrender, and do the job for them. We will stand up and fight, and we will rise up and bring as many people as we can into the light of truth, in order to expose this most ruthless criminal network that has hijacked our societies by using the media, subversion, propaganda, even mind control and psychological operations, and of course, military, if they have to achieve their goals. They push their hate and discrimination, disguising it as love and tolerance, but the fact is, they won't win. For much more, redicemembers.com. That's the website. Check out the second hour coming up right now with Angelo John Gage.